All right, we're going to call this meeting to order. We're going to call the meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. Good morning.
You're all right, Mr. Pavlov.
Council members, if we could, Councilwoman Hill, if you wouldn't mind, please kindly lead us in our invocation this morning.
I'm the invocator?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay.
The invocator.
The invocatress. It's 9:07. Ms. Hill.
Good, gracious, and almighty God. God of yesterday, God of today, and God of tomorrow. We, your created people, pause now before your awesome and magnificent presence. We praise you, God. And we thank you because you have brought each of us and our city through many dangers, toils, and snares. And for that, God, we are grateful. As we begin another city council session, I ask, God, that your spirit will move among us as we do the business that we are elected to do. Empower us with the spirit of goodness, patience, graciousness, and courage that we may do what is best for this city, this region, this state, this nation. And God, I want to ask you for one other favor. I ask you to touch each person who is under the sound of my voice, where he or she may be weakest and need healing the most. Touch God in that place and heal. This is our prayer. And those who would agree said, amen.
Amen. Ms. Margolin, would you kind of lead us in our Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Councilwoman Hill, while you are there at the podium, would you kindly begin with your special recognition?
Thank you so much. I am pleased this morning to have visiting with me those who have been most helpful in developing economic opportunities in Pleasant Grove. I'm going to ask to join me at the podium Sid Hurley, Derek Ferrum, Matt Severs, and Robert Beltran. The first three gentlemen are from the private side. Mr. Beltran is from the public side. Thank you all for being here this morning. Mr. Hurley company, Vista Property Company, developed the shopping center at Lake Union Masters, Sala Vista. That shopping center was a burned out, useless piece of nothing when you took it over. You have now made it not only useful, but very, very pretty. And those who work with me know that not only do I like things useful, I like them to look nice. You've done a wonderful job. You and your team, Mr. Beltran, is there with the community prosecutor's office, along with Ms. Candace Walters. Vista Property Company was gracious enough to give space for the community prosecutor's office. You've given us that without charge. We're able to use that to help with crime in that area. You've helped us with cleanup, and you are certainly doing your part to raise the quality of life in Pleasant Grove. For that, I want to present this certificate of appreciation to the private folks and to say thank you to our public servants. The certificate reads as follows. The City of Dallas Certificate of Appreciation presented to Sid Hurley, Vista Property Company, for donating free office space to the Pleasant Grove Community Prosecution Office. On behalf of the City of Dallas, I commend you for your generosity and commitment to the Pleasant Grove community. The second certificate has the same wording, and it is presented to Mr. Derek Sterum of Vista Properties. And the third certificate has the same wording, and it's presented to Mr. Matt Sievers. And all of the certificates are signed on this, the 15th day of December, 2010, by Von Steele Jones Hill, Dallas City Council, District 5, but on behalf of the mayor and the entire Dallas City Council. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Mr. Hurley, would you like to have a word?
Thank you very much, to Council Member. Turn
the mic up. Nadia, turn the mic up on the.
Mr. Tuchel and the wonderful support that we received from the city under her leadership. I don't want to hold it very long, but we're very proud to have been a part and continue to be a part of Torrey Vista Plaza, the museum there at Lake Union Master. And the one thing you left out was it's pretty. And it looks much better. But, you know, what's really important there for all of us as we go forward is that it's been a very successful project for the tenants out there. And I like to say that business is very good in Pleasant Grove. Thank you.
Business is good in Pleasant Grove, and if I could get 15 more developers just like you to develop throughout my district, I would be very happy. Again, thank you, Mr. Beltran. Thank you also for what you do as a public servant. Thank you both.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for all that you do. Ms. Madrona, Deputy Mayor.
Hill is taking some photographs. I'd like to call Ms. Councilmember Hunt to join me. And I'd like for the principal at Bonham, Ms. Osando Fernandez, to join us, and the staff, and Antonio, and everyone else that are here. And walk over behind the photographer. Appreciate it. You know, we all know that education is so important, not only to the students and our future, our schools and the city, for our city's future, that we have a skilled workforce, that we are producing great students, college-bound or otherwise, making sure that we have a wonderful workforce as we invite corporations and other companies to come to our city, and we make sure that our children are well educated. You know, James Bonham Elementary School is bounded by District 14 and District 2, and we're so proud. They're a exemplary school, but they're also a blue ribbon school. They are one of 25 blue ribbon schools in the state of Texas, one of two in the city of Dallas, and we want to congratulate them. I had the pleasure of being at their celebration a couple of months ago, and it was exciting. You had community, you had parents, you have the teachers all excited, and I think a few of you saw them on the front page, and I don't know if it's Mr. Fernandez or one of the teachers was dancing away, so it was really exciting, and you could really feel the energy of that school, and it has so much community support, so we congratulate you. I'm going to have Ms. Hunt start the special recognition, if you will. Whereas James B. Bonham Elementary School has been named the 2010 Blue Ribbon School by the U.S. Department of Education, and whereas the Blue Ribbon School Award honors schools for achievement and academic excellence and made significant progress in closing the achievement gap, and whereas the Blue Ribbon Program honors public and private elementary schools based on one of two criteria, schools that dramatically improve student performance to high levels on the state test and students that achieve the top top 10% in their state on state tests. And whereas James B. Bonham Elementary School is among only 25 schools in Texas to be named Blue Ribbon Schools, and whereas James B. Bonham Elementary School is also one of the best of 66 schools in Dallas in the Dallas Independent School District rated exemplary, and whereas James B. Bonham Elementary principal, teachers, staff, and students serve as model of best practices for other schools across the state, and whereas Principal Sandra Fernandez, teachers, staff, and students believe that one team, one goal, no limits, can achieve the best to become the best. Now, therefore, I, Pauline Medrano, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Dallas, representing our mayor, and on behalf of the entire City Council, hereby extend special recognition on December the 15th, 2010, to James B. Bonham Elementary School, 2010 Blue Ribbon School, for their dedication and commitment to education. On behalf of James Bonham Elementary School, Ms. Fernandez, if you'll accept this special recognition, and if you'll kindly introduce your guest, and we'll thank you for the council.
Thank you so much for this recognition. Bonham has worked hard for many, many years, and this award just kind of gives us a symbol for our hard work. But I humbly accept this award on behalf of the true leaders of my school, which are the teachers and the parents. So thank you so much. With me today I have our school counselor, Ms. Angie Chavez. We have also Ms. Yvonne Durant, our chief academic officer, and our learning community executive director, Ms. Lisa DeVoe. And our SBDM, which is our site-based decision-making team, which is very important in our schools, that unites parents, teachers, and community, our president, chairperson of SBDM, Mr. Antonio Bardwaj.
Thank you so much for this recognition. On behalf of the Dallas Independent School District, Dr. Michaud, our chief of schools, and Dr. Hinojosa, I bring this morning a warm appreciation for this award, but also an opportunity for us to continue to work together with our city, with our community, as our schools continue to move forward and as our district continues to forge new avenues and new ways of accepting the challenges and educating our children to the highest level. Thank you so much.
I also do not want to leave out H.S. Thompson is the other Blue Ribbon School here in DISD. So thank you very much. Congratulations and well wishes to all the students. Antonio, thank you very much for being here.
School districts to try to help in any way we can to make all of our schools blue ribbon. And for you guys to become blue ribbon tells me that we can do this everywhere. You all did a great job in getting that done at Bonham. And I want to tell you, my father graduated from James Bonham. And yeah, and he told me we'd drive by from work and he, before you all put that addition right between the buildings, he said, we used to play marbles right between the buildings in there. But that was their big game then. But thank you all so much for what you've done for our children. And hopefully this will pass on throughout our city to make others want to be the same. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Davis? Ms. Davis?
Thank you, Ms. Medrano. I also want to thank one of the schools in my district. I did get a letter that they was a Blue Ribbon School, and so I'm very, very excited about the principal who's working down in that Bear Street area. That school has been recognized before as a Blue Ribbon School, so it is the second time being recognized as a Blue Ribbon School in that district. So I just want to thank all of you for the hard work that you do with our kids. I'm a lifelong PTA member, used to be a PTA president, and so I just love the work that the teachers do, the PTA, in our district. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Hill.
Thank you. Ms. Mitrano, thank you for this focus on education and basic education. And to those from the school, thank you for what you do. Education is the key to the future. I am an education nut. There's just nothing else that makes such a big difference in the lives of the individual child and in the lives of our community. Thank you very much for what you're doing, and please continue to do what you're doing to educate children and make a difference in the life of our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Thank you, Ms. Hunt.
Mr. Caraway, yes, Antonio would like to say it.
Antonio, please.
My daughter actually goes to Jim Swann, and I still remember the first day I walked into the school and met Mr. Hernandez. I cannot explain to you or express my gratitude how gracious he was, and you know, my daughter was accepted in the school. And since then, I have been involved with her and the school and the counselors and everybody on a pretty much daily basis, and what I see is exceptional, extraordinary. So I really want to congratulate Ms. Hernandez for what she's done. It's an amazing. She's like an angel for a lot of parents out there, people like us who are looking for a better future for our children. And I'm a single dad, so that means a lot to me, actually. So thank you, and thank you for council members, and thank you for the opportunity, Ms. Madrano. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Antonio didn't mention this, but he is a volunteer at lunchtime every single day.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you all for what you do. Council, we're going to move Madam Secretary to our open microphone in just a moment, as soon as they conclude with the pitch. Right, Madam Secretary.
Speaker that signed up to speak this morning, and it's Richard Sheridan. And while Mr. Sheridan comes forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council or while attending the city council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant-at-arm is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll see a blinking light that means you have 30 seconds on the board, and then red light flashing means stop. State your name and your address for the record, sir.
Yes, it is. Your time is ticking, that form here. All right.
I didn't touch it. Thank you very much for that. So between the foreign government, the oppression of the foreign government, and then certainly the betrayal of the local government, the theocracy, the religious leaders, and the government leaders, they called for a Messiah for relief. They didn't get the Messiah they wanted, but I think they got better than what they were looking for. What did Jesus tell the Jews 2,000 years ago that is relevant today? He said that he was and is the Son of God, the light of God, the truth of God. He said that if we wanted to come to our Father, we should follow Jesus' truth, his wisdom. He said that what he had done, we shall do in even greater things, in encouraging us to do his works, God's works. Faith without works is dead. He said that we are our own physicians. Jesus told the people that their rulers, the Pharisees, were hypocrites, vile and wicked, and were of Satan. Jesus used very strong and clear and accurate words. He gave the people rules of conduct which would help them live a good, godly life, be protected from evil, and achieve everlasting life and a reunion with their Heavenly Father. This world will pass away, but heaven is everlasting. Jesus said that in the final days upon his return, we would see much conflict, much division, where even some of our own family members would be our own worst enemies. We are here today. Jesus said we would be persecuted for speaking his word and doing his work. He was also the world's greatest agitator, a radical man. Jesus called on all of us to be the saints in today's world, to confront the injustices, the corruption. But many are called, but few choose. Most are too busy and lost in the material world. Truly we are in the prophetic biblical times as related in Revelation 18, where the once great Babylon, our once great United States, the new Babylon, our once great Dallas, has fallen because of the corruption of our government and our collective sins. For our sins have reached even to the heavens. Our governments have deceived us as they did in Jesus' time. The good news is that we are moving into Revelation 20, where justice is coming to the corrupt governments, to the corrupt religious leaders.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up.
This is all of us to decide which side we are on.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And the power.
All right. Okay, thank you kindly.
That's all about
you. All right. Council, we're going to move approval for our November 17th City Council meeting minutes. So move a second. All in favor? Any opposed? Considerations, Madam Secretary, number two.
Consideration of appointments to board and commissions. Mr. Mayor, council members, we have one nominee to the Reinvestment 15 Board, the Fort Worth Avenue Board, Ron Beach, being nominated by council member Newman. Meets all qualifications for service on this board.
So moved. Second. All in favor? Any opposed? Council, this is what we're going to do today. We're going to, in just a moment, move into our security briefing. Before we do that, we're going to take up our love field and graffiti. We're going to do that after we come back from lunch. We're going to switch up and go into our security briefing first. We're going to do that this morning so we can put that somewhat behind us. Then we'll come back this afternoon and deal with graffiti, and we'll deal with love field and also street maintenance plan. So it is now 9:30 on December 15th. Right now. Right now. Yes, ma'am. It's 9:30, December 15, 2010. Dallas City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551-071 of Texas Open Meeting Act to receive advice and consultants with the city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. Under Section 551-076 of the Texas Open Meeting Act to discuss the implementation of security procedures. Estimated the time will be approximately an hour and a half. Then we'll go to lunch, and we'll come back and reconvene after lunch at about 1:30. Okay? All right. We've concluded that executive session, and now we're back in open session at 11 o'clock. You can open up the doors. All right, now that the doors are open, it is now 11 o'clock, 23 seconds, December 15th, 2010. The Dallas City Council will now return and go into a closed session under Section 551-071 of the Texas Open Meeting Act. to receive advice and consultants with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: Ash Grove, Texas, LP versus the City of Dallas, legal issues involving the general counsel position at DFW Airport. Will return at approximately 1:30. We're now in executive session.
We'll begin with the item on the agenda. I'll read that into the record. It is to authorize acceptance of a donation from Mark Cuban Companies for graffiti abatement, not to exceed $100,000, financing on private funds. Let me make a couple of comments on this, and then I want to turn it over to Delia. First of all, I want to thank Mark Cuban for the gift. We had conversations over the course of really months now about his efforts and his interest in giving back to the community in a way that will make a difference. And I think this donation, as it is currently structured, will indeed do that. It will allow us the resource to begin going after one of the most insidious problems that we have today in our community and communities across the nation, and that's graffiti. Unfortunately, it's pervasive. It reflects very poorly on our city, and it makes look more crime-ridden and run-down than is the case. The issue in Dallas is not just gang-related graffiti, but it's vandalism pure and simple. And there's not a single section of our city that is immune from the senseless, destructive, and selfish tagglers who not only mean to harm, but also to desecrate our city. And to them, unfortunately, nothing is sacred. The challenge, though, for all of us is to be persistent and aggressive when dealing with graffiti. And I think this has to be done on several different fronts. One is abatement. Second is investigations and arrests. And then finally, it's prosecution, with the kind of theme of all of those is simply not to let up. With abatement, the reality of it is you clean up graffiti quickly, the taggers are much less likely to spend their time and energy there so soon. We also know if you don't clean it up, more and more will appear. Along with trash, shopping carts, a neighborhood can unfortunately go downhill quickly, and that's our objective, is to not have that happen. Our police and our city's residents also need to work much more closely, both in investigating graffiti when it happens and, importantly, in reporting offenders. We also need to be more aggressive about prosecuting these cases when we do make arrests. We have been in consultations with the district attorney's office, and they have communicated to us their efforts to be aggressive on this as we identify individuals that don't pursue them with prosecution. Clearly, though, tackling graffiti will take resources. And with the current budget situation, that presented a challenge. Times we weren't sure how we would get that done. But Mark Cuban's donation will help us get there. He agreed to earmark these funds towards fighting graffiti and making a difference in our community. So, with this today, we're launching a new effort to fight graffiti, both in the short term and in the long term. In the short term, we need to go after this to clean up our city in time for the Super Bowl, when literally the whole world will be taking a look at our backyard. We want to be seen as a modern global city on the rise and not one that's covered with spray paint. We also need to quickly identify and abate graffiti in high-profile areas. We will work with TxDOT, and I had a conversation with Bill Hale on this as recently as exchanging some conversations today. They are committed to be a partner with us and to working on this. They, of course, will focus on the major freeways. DART will continue through Gary Thomas and their commitment to wipe out graffiti where it occurs on its trains, bus stops, stations, and tracks. We also want residents to help us find and abate graffiti and help us identify the taggers. I have asked two people to take on this project. First of all is my colleague, council member Delia Hasso. Delia, who is, I can tell you, passionate about wiping out graffiti. I've had a chance to be with her in a number of community settings where she has taken the leadership in communicating, especially with young children, all the way through to community leaders, the importance of addressing this, and has been a passionate spokesman on this. She is going to take a lead role in this. In just a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Delia. I've also asked prominent Oak Cliff attorney John Barr to really be the individual that ties this together on the private side. He is tenacious, probably as tenacious as Delia about graffiti, and he's like private cleanup efforts and also knows the frustration having to deal with the red tape that we sometimes trip over trying to tie all of the elements together and to do the right thing. It'll bring a tremendous energy. I also want to again thank the generosity of Mark Cuban. We now have some funds for Delia and John to go to work with this. Delia, would you like to make a couple of words?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mayor. And thank you to Mark Cuban, and especially thank you to John Barr, who is here with us today. John, if you'll stand up. John has been kind of the rogue anti-graffiti guy for a long time, and so now we're really partnering with him to help us, not only in Oak Cliff, but throughout the rest of the city of Dallas. He's going to be our point person with the business community to let them know what they can do to help us to address this problem of graffiti and to make sure that we have a beautiful city that we can show off to all of our guests when the Super Bowl comes here in February. So once again, colleagues, thank you for letting me do this or for being there with me on many occasions when we talk about graffiti. This is a never-ending situation, and we must continue to take care of it in terms of cleaning it up. But in my case, where I'm talking to children ages K through 6, to let them know that it is illegal, and those people that they see doing graffiti are actually doing something that is illegal. And a lot of those kids don't even realize that graffiti is illegal because you are defacing someone else's property. And so that's the message we're trying to get across to the younger kids. Those kids that are tagging and doing graffiti now, all I say to you is that we've got better things for you to do. We've got a mural project that will be part of this money that we will put into effect. Taggers and graffiti people, their parents, please, if you're listening today, we have a better alternative for you than to go and deface someone else's property and risk going to jail and getting a $500 citation for you and a $200 citation for your parent. So if you're listening today, parents, if you're listening, we have a better alternative. We've got a mural project that these kids can get involved in. So with that, we'll see if John wants to say something. Come on up to the mic, John.
I just want to say that anybody in the city, they don't need $100,000. They need $5, two cans of spray paint, put it in the back of their car. When they see it, take a picture of it with their cell phone, covered up immediately. Then our crews can come back later. They're deprived of canvas. They're not going to continue. Thank you.
Point out, these two cans of spray paint right here takes care of covering up most graffiti in our city. So we're going to devise a way so that anybody, or any, especially our businesses, understand what that is. You know, again, thanks to Mark Cuban, we can put some of this program together very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie, would you like to make a motion?
I would like to make a motion to accept the donation from Mark Cuban Companies for graffiti abatement not to exceed $100,000 through private funds.
It's been moved to second. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Hasso. When I first met John, he had his law practice in Oak Cliff. One of the things in visiting with him years ago was the issue of individual responsibility and engagement in the neighborhood. And I very much want to publicly say, like I came around before the council began, is thank you, John. I appreciate your passion. He's a long-term investor in Oak Cliff. So I just thank you very much on behalf of the council and the mayor, and I appreciate you being here, taking time out of your law practice. Yeah, he's a lawyer. There are some of those that are redeeming. You're one of those. Now, that all kidding aside, I appreciate it very much, and I appreciate your passion. And this is a great, great event for the council and for Mark Cuban and his interest in the city long term. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Dia.
Mr. Cadena, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you so much for what you're doing all over our city. It's everywhere. I mean, it's not just in Oak Cliff. We've got it all over East Dallas. And tagging is getting more prolific over there. If you find tagging, you can't use those cans, right? I mean, if I got a stop sign or something and they've graffitied, I can't wash out the stop.
Well, you can't wash out the stop, but maybe
you know, if we can avoid them using the curbs and the bridges,
yeah.
And that's the whole point. Just if the real notion is that every business in this community will adopt one block.
Yeah.
We can change the face of this town in 1 year.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're willing to do it. And I've got a community that's ready. We're also in the process of doing a mural in our district. And we've seen once you put these murals up, they leave it alone. So, and the school kids are the ones going to be doing the mural. So it's really exciting that we're doing that, and I see a lot more of that coming. But we're totally behind you, and thank you so much, Delia, for what you're doing.
Well, as I said, we want to make sure that when the world sees Dallas in the next couple of months, it sees a Dallas that it hasn't seen before. And it is a global city on the rise, and one that's not covered by spray paint. Morris has made a very generous donation as a way of giving something back to our community, and we're all going to make sure that this is used in the best possible way. With that, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much. As we go on to the two briefings, we have two briefings, one on streets and one on left field. I wanted to update the council on one thing, though, and that is on the status of Walmart's Fighting Hunger Together campaign. This is a challenge for $1.5 million, and Facebook users are the ones that pick the winners. Food banks and distribution centers in the community with the highest number of like votes on the Fighting Hunger Facebook page will get $1 million for the community. $1 million. And you can imagine how much of an impact that could have here in Dallas. The next five highest ranked communities will get $100,000 each. On Monday, we were number 11 on the list. That morning, though, Mayor Moncrief and Mayor Cluck and myself also emailed out a letter asking everyone to participate. The response has been tremendous to that. Since then, we've added close to 2,000 votes. DFW has gone from 11 to 5, so I guess one way to say it is we're now in the money. But the reality is we need to keep climbing and hopefully try to get to number one. If you're a Facebook user, I would urge everyone on the council and everybody listening to go to DallasCityHall.com, and the Fighting Hunger link is right there on the homepage. It's really important we keep our numbers going up. Some cities, you can imagine, are being very aggressive. They want to get the money. We want to get the money, too. The deadline is December 31st, so we appreciate that, and hopefully everybody will get involved in that. It is go to DallasCityHall.com, and there's a link on the homepage where it says Fighting Hunger, and there's a link there. That will take you where you can make a vote off of the Facebook page. Terrific. Great. You can do it. This is just like Chicago. You can vote early and vote often. So, pardon? Sure. I'm sure there's no reason we can't do that. Absolutely. Terrific. And Ann's got it on her Facebook page. That's terrific. Appreciate all of that. Mary, why don't we go to the street to maybe what we can do again. That material's been distributed. We can kind of just do a summary.
Eric Thomas will be doing that, and Eric, you can send everybody's read and digested and be pretty quick with this.
Good afternoon. We'll start on slide 3 to spend just a few minutes, probably 10 or less. I want to talk real quickly about the background of street condition ratings in the city. Talk about how we developed the annual work plan for street maintenance, and then actually a little detail on the work plan itself and progress that we've made in the last couple months on the work plan. Slide 4, Dallas has had a program since 1975, one of the first cities to really have as comprehensive a program as we have. I'd like to point out that in 2007, the City Council invested about $600,000 into new software and equipment, and that was the largest enhancement to date. And based on that investment, we were able to significantly reduce the operating costs year after year. as well as the staff that it takes to provide this data. On slide 6 is an example of one of the enhancements that we've made to our methodology over the last couple years since we've had this equipment. You can see in the gray box that years ago you could have had a condition rating of 60, and that's one number that kind of summarizes all the different data that we have on the street. But that score of 60 might get you an A grade or even a B grade. So in the green box at the bottom, we've tried to simplify and streamline that so it's a lot more clear. That's one of the factors that has actually contributed to the overall citywide rating decreasing by about 3.5% compared to the last numbers that you saw. And on slides 7 and 8, you see that citywide we're at 83.2%. Again, that's about 3.5% less than what you last saw last year, which was 86.7%. But the good news is, on slide 9, that the work plan that we're presenting here today gets us back on track, even though we've had a couple of really tight, challenging budget years with respect to street maintenance. The 10-11 budget gets us back on track to reaching both of the street condition goals adopted 4 years ago. 87% citywide in satisfactory condition, and at least 80% in each of the 14 council districts. We can skip over to slide 11. This slide tries to show where we tried to focus most of our attention on the annual work plan. Basically, we want each district to be at 80% by the end of the 06 bond program. We know that there are at least three that aren't at 80% right now. In addition to that, we also paid close attention to those districts that were within a couple percentage points of that 80% goal, since they would be in most in jeopardy of sliding below the 80% goal over the next 2 years. Slide 12 talks a little about how maintenance really impacts the life of a street. That last bullet kind of says it all. If we can do things like crack sealing, slurry, and micro, that adds years to the life of the street and greatly reduces our need to spend significantly more capital dollars to reconstruct or resurface those streets. Slide 13, the work plan annually includes basically two types of work, smaller scale preventive type treatments, and then we have what we call major maintenance that's a lot more costly, but again, it adds to the useful life and delays when we have to make a capital investment. Some of those preventive treatments don't necessarily directly increase our percent satisfactory rating immediately, but again, they do or delay deterioration, so it's well worth the money. Slide 14, bottom line, we've got about $1.2 billion in, at least $1.2 billion in maintenance and capital needs for streets. About 8,000 of our 11,685 miles are recommended for some type of maintenance right now. And the estimated cost of all of that is about $260 million. And then there's about another 1,500 miles that really need attention in the next capital program. Slide 15, I'll just kind of point out the last bullet there. The current year's budget helps us or allows us to address about 10.5% of that identified maintenance need of $260 million. So how do we select which streets get into the program? Slide 16 kind of gives the general things that we take into consideration. We start with a technical ranking that comes from pavement management program that lists all 11,685 miles of streets and tells what, if anything, is needed to be done on those streets right now. Then we have about six different maintenance programs, different treatment types. So we allocate funding that's been made available across those six programs. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we look at the districts that need the most help and which type of help they need and do the best that we can to try and develop a strategic plan of helping us ensure that we get to the 87% citywide by the end of the Co-6 bond program, and 80% at least in each district. We'll skip over to slide 18. This table summarizes both the lane miles that are in the work plan, as well as the remaining capital lane miles and dollars from the 2006 bond program. So overall, between now and the end of 2012, it looks like we'll spend approximately $228 million on street maintenance and capital, and that excludes any maintenance work plan from next year's operating budget. So with those investments, we're right on track to get to, as slide 19 shows, just under 87% citywide. So we're pretty confident that with a maintenance program and next year's budget, we'll definitely hit the 87%, and each district will be above 80%. Slide 20, this is our implementation schedule. Important to note that the micro-surfacing and slurry seal programs that's all done by contract. Those bids are about to come in a few minutes today. So those contracts will be awarded hopefully in the early spring, and we'll get that work underway as the temperature heats up. Slide 21 shows what we've done so far. We've basically done about 10% of the non-contract work in the first 2 months of this fiscal year. And the next two slides are just a few examples of projects underway or complete. And with that, we'll take questions.
Thank you. Yesterday, I did a neighborhood tour in certain parts of my district, and I have some streets that kind of hidden back in the back off of Bear and Malcolm X. I need to give you, what do I do, give those streets to you so we can get them into the next bond package?
Sure, you can pass those along to us.
Okay. And these are streets that's kind of hidden away. The neighborhood is changing. People are now beginning to, I guess, kind of take care of that particular area near the Bear and Stevenson area around Lincoln High School. And so there's about 8 streets that have some condition problems that we need to look at. And I give you those street names.
Okay. Thank you. Could you go to slide 38? I'm sorry, 37. One more. Sorry about that. Okay. I'm trying to understand how the allocation of resources is determined. When I look at, for example, District 1, District 3, I'm picking on you, and District, well, let's just start with those. We start out at a satisfactory rating of 86.4 and 87, respectively. And then by the end of this, in 2012, they're going to be at about 91.2 is what we're showing. And you've got Council District 10 that's starting at 86. It's also going to end up at 91.4, which is just terrific. Then I look at, for example, District 13. And I see that we're starting out at 79% and we're going to end up at 81.1. So how is this determination made as to where the resources go, and why are districts that are starting already high getting additional resources that push them up into the 90s when I'm starting at 79 and I'm going to end up at just slightly over 80? How is that determined?
Well, again, the goal is to get the overall entire city to 87 and then each district to at least 80. Some streets or some districts have a different mix of type of street. So some streets will require more money to make a very small increase than other districts. not all districts have the same universe of streets. So, well, also in the appendix is a kind of a breakdown of the number of lane miles. And I think the smallest district is about 550 miles, and it goes all the way up to well over 1,100. So it's kind of a mix of what treatments your streets need, what resources are available, what the contractors in the area are able to do, what city forces are able to do, and we basically tried to do the best we could to stretch the budget allocated as far as we could to try to get everybody to at least 80. Keeping in mind that there's about $200 million plus in capital still to come from the 06 bond program that haven't hit the streets yet.
Well, I understand
and we don't know what next year's maintenance program looks like either, so there's still even next year's budget to
well,
further.
Okay. I mean, I will tell you I'm not satisfied with that answer, and I would like somebody to come and explain to me why I end up so much further behind by a significant margin than a number of other districts that start out significantly ahead of my district.
I want to add a couple of things to Eric said. Number one, I put a capital program on there simply so you could see everything that's going to happen to you this year. We're not dividing out the capital program now. We've done that before. But I wanted you to know what was being invested in your part of the community on all sides, the O&M and the capital. So the capital side of yours is a little low that year, but over the whole process of that bond program, there was more money invested there. Again, if your streets are expensive to move up a condition, it's harder to get them up. And some of the districts are smaller, have streets that are easy to move up the condition. And it would literally mean, and we can certainly do this, sitting down and showing you each district, each street, each situation and condition. Everyone is different. And that's one reason we keep the goals to say we're going to try to get everybody to 80 and the whole city to 83. But some places are easier to move a greater distance than others. And I suspect that's as much your issue with a lot of concrete streets than it is some of the other areas that have a lot of asphalt.
Well, and I'm willing to accept that, but I would like someone to sit down and explain it to me.
Okay, we'll do that.
We were provided with numbers on the street of the last satisfactory rating and such back in, I believe, September of this year, just a few months ago. And then since then, say page 7. Page 7, there you go. And 7 and 8, we start to see, again, not picking on anybody's district, just strictly as an example, go to District 1 right off the bat. You know, it went from a 92% rating, which was, you know, 3 months ago, so to speak. Now it's at an 86% rating. And we see similar reductions in ratings, large reductions like that. That's a 6% reduction in other districts. What's caused this to go down in a three-month period of time to such a degree? If you go back and you do the math on it, that equates to adding another 490 miles. And so
there's no change in the condition of the streets. What there's a change in is 2 or 3 years ago, you all gave us money to use technology to do this instead of eyeballs. And so we have more accuracy, more uniformity, and a better picture of what the situation really is. So
yeah, but that money was 06, 07, or maybe 07, 08,
yeah,
to $700,000.
Right.
And that's been 3 or 4 years. The only reason I'm asking is just, you know, that was during budget time. 3 months ago, I mean, these figures that we saw 3 months ago was right there.
Right.
Right at
the
budget when we were talking about it.
We have done two complete sweeps with this, because when you got the new technology, you want to be sure that you're accurate. And so now we've got 2 years' worth of data. We are comfortable with what, because we knew this was not going to be great news. But I appreciate having the accuracy. I appreciate that we've double-checked. And so we know where we are right now.
We were always worried, as were council members over the years that we've been doing this, about the uniformity of eyeballs. And so this provides us a better picture. But we wanted to be sure we were using the equipment right, that it was giving us uniform data, getting us the same data every time. So it took us a while to get that all aligned.
And again, it just gives me a little heartburn to have these numbers within 3 months to be such different numbers. It gives me heartburn. But I understand, at least hopefully we got the benchmark now that will give us maybe trust. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
Just better accuracy,
yeah,
and
trust,
uniformity.
Because it'll take, you know, to make sure the trust is there in the numbers. When I see that much of a drop, then
Well, you had humans and machines doing it, and then the machines, after we checked them, I think the machines are, I can depend on that better.
Okay. We were asked to list some of the streets that we wanted maybe during this next go around next year to be looked at, and if you maybe get somebody to come back and double check, I'd put my list in. I spent some time doing it. It was on the needs inventory, and for whatever reason, they weren't picked. So I'd like somebody to come by and at least visit with me and give me the rationale why it was on the needs inventory. That was good. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Kipke? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess my question relates to when you go through and you analyze these, and I'm glad that we, you know, to hear Mary's comments about, you know, we now have confidence in the level of that silver, you know, evaluation truck that's driving around. What do you do with state highways? Where's the responsibility?
The state.
The state. Okay, so are they left out of this? I'll give you an example. My district, is Preston Road counted or not counted? So anybody that has a state road in their district, it would not show up in these graphs or in these lane miles.
It's state responsibility. We're not having that in our.
So if I look at lane miles,
we do the assessment, but we wouldn't allocate maintenance money since that's state responsibility.
So let me start off. Let me back up a little bit. When I go back on 37, where it shows lane miles by district, any district, doesn't matter which one, are those lane miles including City of Dallas Street and State Street? Are there any other kind of streets, Eric? Are there county streets? Are there?
They're either, city or county. Private streets would not be there.
Are there county streets that the county is responsible for maintaining?
No, these are all the streets in that district.
Okay.
Excluding private streets.
Sorry.
For the most part, they're gated. And we
what kind of streets
here.
Are there? Are there city streets?
City, state.
City and state.
City and state.
Okay. So does that total include the state maintained lane miles in each district?
The 11,685?
Well, it doesn't matter what district. Just pick one.
No. The total network for the city?
Yes, the 11,684, which is lane miles in the city.
Total network.
That includes state-maintained roads.
Yes.
Okay. But we don't maintain them.
Correct.
When you evaluate them, are they part of the evaluation? No, I guess what I'm trying to find out is when you do an 87% or a 63% or whatever it is, and you have a state road that's in bad condition, is that counting against us even though we're not fixing it?
No. Your percent satisfactory numbers and the projections are based on city streets, city maintenance responsibility, so a subset of every street that you see in the city.
So back to 8 and 9, or 7 and 8, to those graphs, those are city streets only that determine those percentages.
Yes.
All right. But the total lane miles by district includes streets that are not the city's responsibility.
Let me correct myself.
Well, whatever. You don't have to correct yourself. Just tell us what it is.
7 and 8 show the percentage based on city streets. So the 11,685 miles that we continue to say is the city's network.
Yeah.
That does not include streets that we don't maintain.
It does not include.
It does not.
Okay, so then if I go to 30, 37. There was a slide that showed total lane miles by district. Lost track of where they're
34?
Maybe 30.
Well,
all right, so the total lane miles. No, because those are just the ones that are being repaired.
34.
All right. Okay, the lane miles on that, on slide 34, those are lane miles the city's responsible for.
City maintained lane miles.
Okay. And the 11,684 are city maintained.
City maintained.
So anything state owned is outside of it.
Yes.
All right, I'm just trying to make sure we're not. What was that?
Well, I said that.
Well, y'all didn't have your stories aligned. So now that we know what the aligned story is. Okay. So we're not being penalized by the state not doing maintenance.
No.
Okay. Long way to get my answer, but that's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay. We're being penalized, but we're not being penalized in the percentages. Right. So the question then begs, since y'all have prompted me to ask this, do we have an inventory of the state-owned roads, and what's the condition of our little silver truck driving on those, and should we get on the state to say, let's fix up Northwest Highway, Preston Road, et cetera, around the city? So can I make that request of somebody? Madam Manager? Outside of this.
Hollering me about the streets, I make sure that I tell them that we need to have a joint town hall meeting with the county and the state, so that when you're fussing about a particular street, whoever's responsibility it is to maintain that area, like the reason that you see all those trees being planted up and down 67 is because my constituents were fussing about the fact that how the high weeds were, and they could not distinguish and didn't know to distinguish the responsibility of the city versus the state. But because we have the town hall meeting, we're the only ones that are there that they can holler at. So I said to my constituents, let's make sure that we bring the state and the county when we get to talking about the streets, so that we can say and explain to them that the highways and all that high grass that y'all are talking about, that's, for example, Royce's problem, or that's somebody else's concern, and we need to bring them into fold. Because they mistakenly, they're just citizens of the city. And when they see it, they do not make a distinction about Preston or the keys and the freeways, the entry points, the exit points. They're still looking and blaming all that on us, the city. So we can share, Mayor, the responsibility that needs to happen at that town hall meeting that we should have in relation to the streets, so that everyone can share their responsibility. State, county, and the city, and then divide it up the system to know where to go. And so we put the state on notice at the time.
I'm just doing it. And I hate to be redundant, but I'm still confused here. So if I go to slide, I'm trying to clarify again Ron's point, Mary and Eric. If I go to 34, and I'll be district-centric for a moment, I apologize, 1,146 miles in District 3, that's total miles. Is that miles that are state and city, or is that city?
City.
City-owned. Okay. All right, and so we think we know what things are state, but not. For instance, I think Davis is a state highway. I'm pretty sure Davis is a state highway. Okay. So the city's not responsible for any maintenance on Davis. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So if this is just the city version, then the percentage a couple shots before or later on slide number 36, the 24 miles, that's planned miles on the city street. Okay. Okay. I'm processing. Thank you. Then if you go a couple more after that, the projected percentage, and Ms. Margolin talked about it, 87 to 91, just to use District 3, that's for city streets only.
Yes.
But that's, but the average citizen doesn't necessarily compute that, going back to Dwayne's comment.
They don't.
They, it's streets is a street is a street, whether it's county,
street,
city, or state.
Right. But streets are state streets, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate this briefing, but it's still very confusing. And you know, I mentioned to Ms. Koop, if I was to talk to citizens in my respective district and say we're going to be at 91%, they'd laugh at me. But okay, I understand new technology and the comparison and that sort of thing. Okay.
And
all right.
Well, I think Mr. Caraway has a really good response to that, and work and get the other people that are responsible into the different streets. The state guys need to hear it. They don't. You know, they don't hear it. Whenever, I mean, y'all have to invite them. Just invite them, tell them you'd like for them to come because you want to talk about the streets.
Okay,
particularly
well,
if you've got state highways in your area.
It will be very instructive to the council, Mary and Eric, when we get the data by council district on what is truly a state highway and state responsibility versus streets versus city.
Okay.
And for those state highways that we somehow have contracted to take responsibility for.
Sure, we'll do that.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
District 8, followed by District 3.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Eric, let me ask you on 18. I want to try to understand a little bit also. On 18, like on, let's look at District 6. See, he's got 24.88 miles. And then he's got, over here, he's got 56 capital miles. That's a big production, Greg. He's got streets that need to be totally redone.
Yeah, well, let me walk through this chart from left to right.
Please.
So for District 6, there's almost 25 miles in the maintenance work plan for 10-11. That's planned work, planned maintenance work. In the next column over, that 25 miles is roughly $1.6 million. Next column over to the right, he's got 56 miles of capital work that hasn't started, or at least is not complete. That 56 miles of capital work has an estimated cost of $54.6 million. And then the far right two columns, that's a total of 81 miles between the work plan for this year and remaining capital. And a total of $56 million between capital and the maintenance work plan.
Right. So the capital program is a lot more extensive.
Oh, absolutely.
So I guess that's why their percentages are so higher up.
Right. All of the capital dollars directly increase that rating.
Yeah.
A lot of the maintenance dollars won't necessarily have a direct impact, but it's going to...
It'll keep your streets from getting worse later, so you won't drop quickly because we've maintained your streets to that the treatment that
but
keeps
I've
them whole.
I've got 35 miles of maintenance that you're going to take care of for my district.
Yes, sir.
Correct. But only 2 miles of capital improvement.
But guys, remember, this is the 06 bond program. And you may have had 15 2 years ago.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I was going to say, a lot of mine's probably...
May have already been
already
done. Right.
So, I'd still like to go over with you about streets.
Sure.
And maybe see what's on the maintenance and what's on the program, the lane.
I think we gave you, we'll be glad to come back and go over with you, but I think there was an attachment in this briefing that does that for you.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's in there.
But we'll be glad if you want to come go over it with you. We'll be glad to.
Okay, I'd like to talk with you.
Sure.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Cooper.
Okay. A couple things. If you do have meeting, well, first of all, perhaps it'd be an idea if we took that little gray machine and we drove down Preston Road in the county street in the TxDOT. State Street to see what they come out as far as the evaluation goes. Preston Road is like in a constant state of rehabilitation. I don't know what the issue is there, but
I want to be able to tell y'all what that will cost us to do and see if we really want to do it.
Well,
I meant the time and the money it would take to grade them.
Okay.
Because it takes away from our grading.
Right, so. I agree with you. But the real issue is when you have those town hall meetings and you invite the state and the county to come, there's two issues. One is that the state has no more maintenance dollars.
Yep.
And that is a conversation you need to have with your state legislators.
Yep.
Okay? So just inviting TxDOT to come is not going to solve the issue. And the second thing is that there should be a conversation opened up with the county about what is their role going to be in maintenance, or are they going to have a role in maintenance now of roads that are not just county roads that are out in unincorporated areas. And that's a conversation that each of us probably needs to have with our county commissioner, because that's a conversation we have not had before, but that is something that they do in other counties. So, just those
right.
Things for thought.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah, just real quick, and those are great points about whether it's county or state. And the main thing, I just want to make absolutely sure that we don't fall in the trap that I think we ended up spending some money this last go-around, $6.5 million for money that the city is spending that the state of Texas should have been spending. And so for beautification and just mowing and things like that. So the citizens' money of this city is being spent on money that should have come from the state. I just want to make absolutely sure if we do this with the state and the county that we do not spend our money and let them out of that obligation that they're supposed to do.
Now, we have not finalized this deal, but what we are pressing TxDOT to do, they were spending $1 million a year on mowing and trash pickup in our area, and we have pressured them to give us $1 million, and we'll work on our stuff.
Right.
Whether they keep doing it, I don't know. But
that's good. Thank you very much.
Mr. Atkinson?
Thank you, Mayor. If you turn to page 35, there's a question that I asked that last year, 2008-2009, that we did not have microsurfing a service seal. Now we have it at 10-11. And by council district, the roads that did not have that, are you taking consideration that those one would need to be done first priority? How you prioritize that in order to get the increase of the percentage of per district?
The chart on slide 14, that was the latest snapshot of what all the current needs are. So we recognize that we didn't have slurry or micro the last two fiscal years. So basically, we had an idea of how much slurry or micro we could get done this year with available funds. We went back to the data to see, well, what are the worst of the worst and where does it make the most sense to spread that 175 miles and 70 miles to try to have the best impact so that we would reach the 87% citywide and the 80% at least in each district.
So you do have a breakdown between districts on the service seals and the microsurfing?
Right. For instance, there's about 1,200 miles that could use slurry seal right now, and I've got a list actually in the bottom.
You have breakdown by district, so
yes.
We know which district.
So I can give that.
I would like to have a copy for my district page. I guess everybody probably wants a copy of that. I didn't see it. I don't have a paper copy. I'm a computer copy. I asked for one. Y'all didn't give me one. 17 or 33. Which page? Yeah.
I can get you that information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mary, you go to left field?
Yeah, we're left field now. Eric, you escaped now. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We're going to go into Love Field Concessions theming, and hopefully this afternoon we'll get some direction in that regard from you, and then also to give you an update as to our progress.
And AC, why don't you go through to the point where you've got the three theming options, then we'll kind of stop it at that point. I'll try to see if there's a consensus of the council to be able to have you go forward. Then you can finish the other pieces, which are really more informational
yes,
than trying
yes,
to gain input from.
Thank you. The on page three, we have the schedule as to how we're going to be proceeding on the concession selections. You can see that it extends out to having the last part of that all the way in 2014, but we're going through the process of developing our outreach efforts as well as putting together an RFP and then following the guidance that was given by the council that we have included at the very back as the appendix for option what was called option four in working this program out. The following page really just identifies in a graphic way a Gantt chart there that puts that schedule to on a visual, more visual manner. In terms of the theme, the theming aspect of this effort or part of the effort, we want to go through with you and present Gensler, who has been augmented to our consulting team with Unison, and then explain a little bit about the theming in terms of what it is, why do it, and implementing, and also how did we go about this ourselves. As far as Gensler, we wanted to see about expanding the consultant help that we were getting from Unison to really identify an internationally known group that would be able to put to bear some additional expertise in the area of marketing and theming that has been done and demonstrated in other airports. To that end, we identified this, working together with Unison, identified this firm to see and about helping us accomplish that. You'll see in a few slides afterwards, their work has continued is throughout the world, but we just are pointing to a few of their more recent projects that they have at Kennedy and some of the others that are a couple others that are mentioned, and really didn't really want to get into those particular projects other than say that they are very well recognized and respected. With regards to the question of our theme background in terms of what it is, what we're really looking at is trying to establish a unifying design concept. Maybe use to help explain that, try to use some words that hopefully we would identify easily with. If you talked about a Western theme, you would certainly get an understanding about what that might mean, possibly mostly Fort Worth. If you talked about Art Deco, which that may not be what we would want to do. If you're talking about Art Deco and looking at Fair Park, that is thematically that whole area, contemporary style that in the Arts District is very much thematically what is being done in that area that helps to unify that area and make it very distinctive. In a similar way, we can give direction to the architects to see about helping to create a unifying design concept that would then bring elements of the terminal as well as the stores and how they are constructed and what they might have in the way of construction materials, etc., used to house their particular businesses, but even go even further into the merchandising as to what they're going to be offering and help unify that with a theme. It'll also give us an opportunity to really help guide some of our decisions as to who might be the concessionaires that we would want to select. Now, in terms of why doing it, always at the bottom line, if you will, is to make more sales, more money. And the way that happens is that you create a sense of space, you create a more memorable experience for the traveler, and basically do what you would find in any other mall, etc. As you make people get in an environment and with a disposition to spend money. The how do you implement it? There's a variety of ways that include having these elements included as part of our RFP process in the design of the terminal spaces themselves as the guidelines that would be used for judging who we might have in the way of actual concessionaires that can help enhance that overall theme concept. How we did it, again, we selected an internationally renowned group that has a great deal of expertise in this area to take advantage of their experience and know-how. And they came up through their market research that they have at their disposal to come up with themes that they thought would be most applicable in our situation and also that would take advantage of anything that might be happening out in the marketplace generally. Those themes that they developed were brought before a variety of different groups that are mentioned, and I'm on page 13. We took a look at the number of things that they had presented, and gave them some additional feedback. And then lastly, they went and put together some renditions, which are hopefully designed to give you some idea of how that theme, or those themes rather, might be expressed at the terminal itself. Now, in terms of the theme presentation, we have also a little bit of discussion on the trends that are out there at airports and what's going on in terms of some of the merchandising that is being offered, how this is going to be expressed in our particular situation, and the presentations, of course, of the themes themselves. And to that end, we'll have Keith Thompson of Gensler that will help us get that done. So, Keith, if you would.
Hi, I'm Keith Thompson of Gensler, and I also want to introduce three people from our design team, Marcia Gatto-Akins, Joe Wheeler, and Neil McLean, who were instrumental in the material that you see in front of you. They provided both retail expertise, retail design expertise, and aviation concession design expertise in what you have in your package. What we wanted to try and give you a sense of today is the stepping off point for the future work that we hope that you'll undertake at Love Field, and that is really to make a decision today on which theme to pursue as part of the concessions program at the expanded terminal facility. That concession theme will be based on the trends, as AC mentioned. We're going to talk a little about the areas of influence, what we're really able to touch and what we're not able to touch in the context of this theme, and then go through the three themes themselves, the Texas Outdoors, Destination Everywhere, and Distinctively Dallas, and talk a little bit about what was behind them and how they manifested themselves in the concession theme. Next. One of the trends that you'll see in airport concessions, and all of you have had a chance to go through various airports. You all have your own opinions about what those trends are. But really, it's one thing. It's really starting to use concessions as a way to market and position the airport itself amongst its peers in the industry. It's a conduit for business and tourism. And probably most importantly, it's a way to cater to the social and entertainment needs as well as just providing amenities and retail offerings for the passengers. As you know, post 9/11 world, passengers tend to spend more time on the airside than they used to, or at least a little bit more uncertain as to how much time they're going to spend on the airside. And we want to make sure that we provide the passenger with the opportunity to do whatever they need to do on the airside, and in turn, generate revenue for the airport as a result. One of the other trends, the next sheet. One of the other trends is in what we actually offer at airports. You'll notice a lot of new offerings at airports over the traditional steam table cafeteria and newspaper gift shop that was the hallmark of the 70s and 80s. There's a lot of emphasis now on healthy food and beverage choices, a lot of emphasis on both national brands and local brands. You have a lot of personal service retail, a lot of electronics. And the technology that's starting to enter into some of these concessions is becoming increasingly robust as well. As the airport starts to continue to experience growth, though, we really have to focus on which of those areas we need to develop to really emphasize the retail purchasing opportunities and the passenger experience at the airport to make that travel journey as stress-free as pleasant as possible, and in turn generate the optimal revenue package for the airport itself. Next. One of the things you can see on this particular sheet, it gives you a quick sampling of some of the trends that we see in airport concessions. One of them is the opportunities for electronics and music, for health products and wellness, a lot of specialty shops such as wine stores, specialty areas like that. In the food and beverage areas, a lot of very health-driven options as well as traditional cuisine. Again, local brands are increasingly being introduced as a part of the concession package at airports. I know at John Wayne, where I recently was doing some work, they had a large emphasis on local branding as a part of what they're introducing as the concession program there. And it factored very heavily into their evaluation criteria as well. So, and then the personal service area, a lot of other personal services you've probably seen, massage booths in Seattle and things like that. So there's a whole panoply of new options that are available to you in developing the concessions at the airport, and we're going to try and work with the airport to develop in their RFP as some of the potential candidates for the airport. Next. Again, the areas of influence is really what are we able to touch, what are we able to do as a part of a theming program, and how does that affect what you're going to be putting into the RFP? First and foremost, it's not changing the architecture of the terminal per se. That's already established, and we understand that. But it's more than just doing a infill program into the cubicles that are available, or the cubby holes available for concessions. We're really trying to work with the building configuration without changing it in any significant architectural or costly way, but do it in a way that enhances the areas associated with the concessions, including all the interior designs to create essentially a unifying portal that the entire concourse in this case will manifest as an expression of what Dallas is and what you want to have here as your airport. Finally, all these different elements of the concession theme get unified both within the leasehold and potentially with elements that are part of the larger public space to create that one sense, that one unifying theme. And in turn, one other thing that's not on this, it's got to be flexible because over time, concessions are going to change. We want to make sure that whatever we do has the capacity to evolve along with the airport and along with the changing times themselves. Next. The first concept we came up with was Texas Outdoors, and this is really trying to think of Texas as, you know, the great state with the rugged scenery and the wide open spaces and the independent spirit that it reflects. Love Field in particular can provide a reminder of the regional resources, and it's really an outdoors-oriented design theme. Next. With that, you know, we deal on the keywords of nature, of independence, of ruggedness, the boldness, the beauty and in essence the scale of the state as one of our design unifying themes. Next. This gives you a sense of what we are given to start with. This is essentially the design as we understand it today that's currently under construction. So this is the raw canvas we have to work with for the concession theme. Next. That morphs into, in this instance, Texas Outdoors, into the themes of the dynamics, the adventure, the natural, the color, the wonder, and the organic aspect of what makes Texas really wonderful. And you can see that in some of the materials that are chosen, in some of the forms that are used, particularly the natural forms over the kiosk. And that becomes the unifying theme that we would apply not only to this particular location in the concourse, which is the throat, just as you exit security going out towards the gates, but next image. Further down, a more direct view of the retail concessions along that throat. Next. And in turn, out in the larger atrium space as it would start to serve the food court, some of the food and beverage areas. So you can see some of the woods, the natural elements, the natural wood elements, and so forth, to become an element, unifying element of this design theme. Again, the individual tenants would undertake the improvements themselves, but they'd be tied into the some unifying concession guidelines as a framework for that evolution. Next. Our second theme was Destination Everywhere, and Destination Everywhere really took the notion of not so much where you are, but where you're going as our unifying theme. it really was to talk about Love Field being the ambassador to these destinations and using them as the keystone to what we wanted to try and develop inside the concourse theme. In turn, those concessions would be restaurants and shops featuring local cuisines and local flavors, but with a focus on the destinations that are served from Love Field. Next. Again, using that as an example, we came up with the keywords of anticipation, imagination, adventure, expectation, and experience as sort of the touchstones that we want to work towards in developing an architectural concept. Next. Again, the plain vanilla, what's there today, and next. How that could evolve as a part of Destination Everywhere, with themes coming from the various destinations that are served out of Love Field, not so much focused on what is here today, although it would still end up having retail opportunities and food and beverage opportunities keyed back to local establishments. Secondly, on the second view on the concourse, I think you see some of the unifying material along the out, sort of framing these, but they're all really composed of the eclectic connections and the variety and the surprise that comes about with air travel. I think you can see on the left side there an aircraft-themed retail opportunity that emotes the aircraft themselves. Next. And then in the large atrium food court space, again, how that might be manifested as a unifying theme. And I think you can start to see characteristics that carry forward through each of these three images within this individual concept. Next. Our third concept was distinctively Dallas. And with Love Field being the doorstep of Dallas, it's the one airport that is purely Dallas, and as a result gives you the opportunity to really speak to this city, not the region, not the state. We want to use this to try to show the unexpected or unknown side of Dallas and to express the diverse community and experience the multi-regional inspired amenities. And this really ended up being a combination of very metropolitan combined with the very historic aspects of the Dallas proper area. Next. Again, dealing with the culture, the discovery, the diversity, what's unique about Dallas, and the intrigue that it can create in the architectural concept. Next. Again, the plain vanilla. Next. And how that can be transformed with a combination of the very metropolitan look of Dallas combined with some of the more rustic, original city architectures, as evidenced by some of the stacked stone in the middle. You can see that the offerings on either side that emote some of the local opportunities. And it really gets into the polished urban architectural genre as much as having keynotes hailing back to some of the origins of the city itself. Next. Again, a view along the retail street as you exit past security down to your gate. Next. And a view of the food court area where this would be manifest for virtually all passengers to experience. Next. Again, we've developed three themes based on our consultations with the airport staff and the various other stakeholders that you saw referenced earlier. Those being Texas Outdoors, Destination Everywhere, Distinctively Dallas. We're hoping to give you an opportunity to make further inquiries of us on this and hopefully make a direction that we can proceed with in the future. And with that, I'll turn it back over to AC.
Why don't we actually hold it at this point, and let me open it up to comments from the council and see if we can't give you a consensus on one of the three. Angel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for this presentation. Couple of points. One is on the... I'm going to do these out of order, the three that you presented to us. On the number two, if we could pull that up, the Destination Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with that it really is a destination nowhere, because it doesn't give you a real sense of place, of Dallas. It could be any airport, anywhere. And so I'm not sure that, depending on what we want to get across, and my hope is that we would get across that we're introducing someone to Dallas or someone to Texas in a larger sense, but someone to a very specific location rather than just any airport. And number three, I think the distinctively Dallas. I like that in concept, but my concern is that only Dallasites will understand the references. You know, only people familiar with the city will really get the things like, you know, the Arboretum Spire or whatever these businesses
the metaphors are named. To the local.
Yeah, the metaphors to the local scene. So I'm not sure that introduces someone to Dallas. I think it really reinforces a Dallasite's perception of our own community. So my personal favorite here is the Texas Outdoors, you know, using natural materials and really trying to create something distinctively Texan. For some reason, we run away from the fact that we're in Texas. We're always afraid of, you know, the big cowboy hats and, you know, the Dallas TV show. I think we ought to embrace it. I mean, we're not Boise, Idaho. We don't have to have this kind of plain vanilla look about our airport. I think we should be proud of the fact that, you know, we've got this cowboy thing going on. We have incredible outdoor landscapes to choose from and to kind of bring indoors. And I think this is a really neat idea, and I think you could do a lot with it. So my pick would be Texas Outdoors, and I say we embrace the Texan aspect of it. This may be the only time someone visits the state, and it would be nice for them to come away with, you know, understanding there's modernity, they're going to see that with the airport, but that we have this incredible rich history and this distinctive flavor of Texas that they're not going to get in any other place. So I say we embrace it, and we appreciate the fact that we're in Texas and we have something very distinctive to offer. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. And as a marketing expert, and that's what I do for a living when I have a chance to do that. But first of all, I don't like number two. There's no need jiving about it. I do have those things.
I'm getting a sense of that pretty strong.
Yeah. So number two, you don't even have to show to me anymore. But then, you know, when people are visiting, and I say this very quickly, years ago, when we brought some folks in from Baltimore, when they first came to Texas, they were looking for the horses and the cows and everything, because that's the perception that folks have. I'm a promoter of Texas, so I like number one. But I love number two number three, because we have a responsibility to promote Dallas. I think that when you show Bishop Arts and you show the West End and we show the new bridge and we show the arts, that do allow the businesses an opportunity to, if you're enjoying the two, the number one and number three, somehow you got to bring those two together. To where the message of Texas is there, but the flavor of Dallas is there, so that when folks get off the plane, they can say, "I want to go to Bishop Arts." They can want to go to the museum. They can know that the bridge, when they are in the taxi cab driving, they can reflect back to that. So in short, figure out how you incorporate one and three collectively. Because you got to have Texas, so you got to reflect that, the cowboy boots, the big bulls, the whatever we're going to have, but then you got to enjoy the great things, the Overdeck Park at Dallas, so that folks know why they're here, because they may be visiting, but they may be visiting to relocate, or they may be visiting to come back, and we want to make sure that we sell our city, and that's what we're here to sell. Put the Fair Park up there, put all of Dallas. Put the South Dallas Cafe up in there too, so folks, and Katie Mays, you know, put some soul food stuff in there, so the folks can know. But sell Dallas, that's what I want to say. Sell Dallas, sell the Fair Park, sell the Overdeck Park, sell downtown, sell the Arts, sell American Airlines, sell Bishop Arts, sell Oak Cliff, District 4, make sure we take care of it. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. Great presentation. I had no idea that the council was going to be invited to participate in making aesthetic and design decisions. I agree that number two is kind of nowhere. So going back to one and three, my concern about one is that while we are in Texas, Dallas really is not represented by a lot of the kind of stereotypes of Texas, the great outdoors and the cowboy boots. I'm afraid that that's too generic, just as much as Destination Everywhere is too generic, that it's generic Texas. But we're not generic Texas. We are distinctively Dallas. And I would prefer to see us really strongly brand Dallas and to drill down and focus on what that means and for that to be the emphasis. So I'm not particularly interested in including the Texas outdoors necessarily, unless it's a part of what we are here in Dallas. I would like to really focus in on distinctively Dallas.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, I like one. The only thing about one, you know, on paper you see, why do we visit Arizona? And I think it's the same picture where this little guy is up on this mountain shouting, why to visit Arizona? So that's one of those things. And the other thing, I wish we had some cowboy boots here. Somewhere on the picture, I guess this big Texas boot. But I kind of like one, but I also love three. And the reason I like three is I think I would like to see us talk about our culture, our city, as people come into the city, for those who are coming to visit or on a business trip, when they see all of the entertainment that we have. Then hopefully they can ask, well, how do I get to the Bishop Arts District? How do I get to, we have wonderful restaurants here, wonderful restaurants. How do we get to this place or that place? It's something about number three that I like, that it kind of promotes Dallas as a whole, but I also like number one too. So if we can just kind of just pick, you know, take a little from one, a little from three, and kind of blend it together, for those who are traveling through, let them know that they're in Texas. So I think the staff did a really good job on that. I would like to see a little more culture. Anything from the Black Dance Theater? Is it on three?
Is it?
Okay. Okay. Is it? Okay. Okay. At the top. Okay.
Oh.
Okay, and you know, so if we can just add some other look, culture flavors, that would be good as well. But I like three and one. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think we're heading in a direction here. I too,
but not anywhere.
Not anywhere. I like the. Some of the materials and colors that you had in the distinctively Texas one, but I do not like the idea of trying to promote the entire state as a theme for airport. We still are Dallas, Texas. So I guess my preference would be to take some of the materials, the stone, the wood, and the stuff that you had shown in number one and move them into number three, because I personally did not like the materials that you showed on number three.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect to your choice, you know. And I think that we should not be afraid of selling Dallas, Texas. No matter where I travel around, I mean, like it or not, people remember us. You know, the home of JR, Big D, Big Hair, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't think we should be afraid of, you know, calling it JR's Barbecue or the Big D Diner or whatever. And we ought to be proud of the fact that we've got communities and neighborhoods and places for them to see and do when they're here. You know, like Bishop Arts and Fair Park, et cetera. And so my preference is more of the materials from number one, but the theming from the distinctively Dallas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm kind of focused on number three also, and the reason why that if you got people who's coming to Dallas and they want to know what Dallas is all about. I mean, if you travel to New York, Denver, Colorado, you will know what it's them all about. So I think we need to focus on Dallas, but we also need to make sure that, of course, did you, when you did this 1, 2, and 3, did you do a survey of people who come to Dallas during what part of the year? Was it springtime, summertime, or wintertime? How did you compose your survey?
It was more consultative with staff and various limited stakeholders that AC alluded to in the earlier slides. It wasn't a part of a large survey exercise that came up with the themes. It was trying to identify three different topical themes that each was unique enough that we could start to frame some of these architectural decisions around.
Is there any reason why you didn't check with corporate America, the relocation, you know, why people relocate to Dallas and what things they need to see? I think it's great what you're doing, but I think you need to put some input in from corporate people, just everyday people who travel to Dallas, love to see it and say, hey, what do I like about Dallas? Where do I want to go? I mean, those are people who come to Dallas. You know, with staff and us, we saying all of this, but what do people actually come to Love Field and say, where I want to go?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we incorporate that destination point to the Cotton Bowl or to Far Park or to the Art District, how we show that relationship? You about to say something, please?
I guess two thoughts. One is the market trends is the next iteration of this, and they have a lot of research that would suggest some of the things that we've talked about as far as some of the services that would be wanted to be offered there that were different from what we were originally presenting. The next point, though, is that if we have a direction with regards to these one of these three choices, that kind of specificity that you're suggesting is something that we could be doing to refine if there's some better...
And that's what I'm leading to. I mean, you can have a destination to Love Field, but you still got to have a link to those other amenities that we got here to show. I think we're trying to promote Dallas also, and we're trying to move the people to that direction.
And I think we can do that in the next phase of this.
So that's the second phase.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Ms. Alvin.
Hey, yeah, real quick, I like number three. And then Ms. Medrano, I think one of the things that we probably need to make sure they do is if they just put Motor Street Burgers there, and then those jets will come from all over, just come to get a Motor Street Burger. Huh? Motor Street? Yeah. Anyway, Mayor, number three, Motor Street Burgers.
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. For DFW Airport, I absolutely think we see a Dallas and a Texas. Advertise Texas as the state we are, advertise Dallas as the large city. But for our own Love Field, it's Dallas first and Dallas last. So I think our focus should be on Dallas. I remember when I moved to Texas 30 years ago, I was enthralled with the television show Dallas, JR, the whole deal. And there's nothing wrong with that. We're proud about that. One of the things that makes Dallas successful, stands ahead of other cities in Texas, as well as throughout the country, is that we're a can-do, positive city. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that and expressing that at our Love Field Airport. That is our airport. Earlier today, we had a discussion about another airport and issues like that. There is no debate. Love Field is our airport. It is in the heart of Dallas, and we should be proud about that. So I say Dallas, start to finish. Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Hossel.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I agree with the combination of a distinctively Dallas and a Texas Outdoors. I definitely think we need to play up what this state is famous for, but certainly what Dallas is famous for. And my only suggestion would be to, I see the Latino Cultural Center there, so possibly a ballet folklorico or a mariachi uniformed person. There's probably over 500 of those groups here in the city of Dallas, and that adds to the diversity and the culture of the city.
Thank you very much. Just today.
Thank you, Mayor. I totally agree. I think it should be Dallas, and I think we need to bring our arts into it. I think we need to bring the State Fair into it. I think we need to bring our Arboretum into it, our park, everything that we're proud of here in Dallas. And I think that's what we need to do, is we're selling Dallas
mm-hmm.
at our airport.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Salazar, please.
Just quickly, I agree on the 13. The only thing I don't see in this league, I've seen in the other cities that where they also promote what their industries are. You know, someone flying in through Love Field is not going to get off a plane, for example. We're not going to, you know, walk out just doing that. Exchanging flights, you know, they're not going to be able to enjoy it. But also, they can also promote, you know, our industry. You know, Texas Instruments, you know, high tech. You know, promoting the city not just as an art and culture, but also as a place to do business. So once you know, come back and do your business here. Just a thought. Again, I've seen in other cities are doing that, but you know, it's kind of like missing from here. This is fun and everything, but also we want business people to want to come to Dallas and do their business.
Ms. Coop, please.
Well, I do like the warmer colors of number one. I like the love of the Austin Stone and that kind of look, and I think that to me typifies being in Texas. We use those natural materials. One thing I think that could kind of thematically bring some of this together, because I do like the Dallas thing, is what they do in Austin. I've mentioned this before. They have every afternoon about 4 o'clock. They have their art displays. It could be a band, it could be a person just singing a cappella, it could be, and music is what brings that airport together along a theme. And I think, you know, with us being, you know, so much into the arts now, that maybe perhaps that could help bring some of those disparate pieces together and combine the Texas and the Dallas together, because I think that may be one of the things that's missing here. Although perhaps it doesn't help with the, you know, the naming of the branding of each individual food outlet, it could help bring together Booker T. Washington and those students there that could perhaps perform and have an outlet and a venue for their arts, for their performing arts. And I think that would be something that's really, really outstanding and neat. And besides that, we don't have the corny dogs in there, so that's one other thing.
Or like the 6th Street performance area at Austin, the performance area.
Well, we're made about the corny dogs, corny right? Dogs. The state fair and the corny dogs. But, yeah, it really does. People stay and they linger, even if their plane has not landed or whatever in Austin, just to listen to the music and watch the performances there, and quite frankly, it adds something to the day when you feel like you've seen something that's kind of exciting and different, and you've come into a city and seen it. I think we have perfect airport to do that in, and I think we have great cultural amenities, and I think we can use our Booker T. Washington and some of our youth to help them have venue for that. So that is one thing I'd like to see kind of added into this mix. And now you've got all these things. I don't know how you're going to bring it all together. I'm sure you will, though. That's
well, we worked on Austin, so if you like that one, you'll like what we do here, I guess.
Well, you know, Austin, you have to be a local food vendor in order. Your company had to have started in Austin in order for you to be able to have a food store there, like Salt Lake Barbecue. And I always thought that was really a lot of fun, because you think, even though it's just for the casual passerby, you think, oh, well, I'm enjoying Austin. I'm getting to eat where all the people from Austin are getting to eat, you know. So I think there's Amy's ice cream there and so on and so forth. That's always been something that I thought was really unique. It's very unique to Austin, but I think it also can be kind of unique to Dallas, too, so.
We started to shop some of those, but there's certainly more ideas coming out of this group here.
I mean, just go to the Colorado Springs Airport. They even work at Colorado Springs, and they're local food vendors as well in that airport. I don't know if you've gone there very often.
I worked at Colorado Springs.
You work out of Colorado Springs?
No, I worked on it back in the 80s.
Oh, okay. And I think they do a good job, especially for a really small airport. I think they do a great job.
Thank you. Anybody else? Please, Ms. Brown.
Thank you. I can't say anything for number two. Number one, I kind of like. I like number three. But I think more important for me when I'm in an airport, I want fast service, I want friendliness, so I think that perhaps a water feature, some type of music, art, I think would help out. But I think more importantly is what I see is, you know, lines, if they're friendly, the service is great, it's consistent, and quality. And I think that's what will spread the word about Luffield. I think that's most important.
Okay. You know, when you've got your buildings here, your configuration, in one you show them lined up side by side. In the other one you show one on this corner, you've got one on this corner, you got one back here. It looks kind of like a mall.
Where are we talking
now? I'm
on
the concession thing on number 3, and it's packed. The first picture shows them lined up. Move down to another picture.
Second
picture? Yeah. I don't have a number. Oh, 33 and past 33. Okay, see how they're lined up just down the mall?
Yeah.
Okay, go to the next picture. Same thing. Go to the next one. There. See how you got them on corners and offset one to another?
Yeah, these are essentially the spaces.
Maybe I'm not seeing it right. Maybe that's not the way it is.
What the difference that you're seeing is the difference of the view. The first one that you said the mall, if you're looking down down that terminal space,
yes.
There's at the T where you're going to have that corner.
That's the corners, okay.
Right. Yes, sir.
Well, that's a unique look, and it's kind of like you're in a mall.
Right. And
you know?
And that's we're going to have that by nature of it, having a T, and
yeah.
What to then do with that particular space.
Okay.
And that what you're seeing there is a concept more than an actual architectural design at this point,
okay.
But something that would be, if you will, kind of creating a kiosk or some central feature. Now,
yes.
That's going to still be subject to getting moved around and stuff, but that's what the reason why you're seeing a difference.
Yeah, and you got a music deal on this corner right there. The thing on the white, that right there, yeah.
Yeah, one, you can go back and do
something. I just think it's a neat setup. Thank you. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. On Love Field, we're investing $1 billion. We're going to have over 5 million people go through this on an annual basis. It just seems to me that this is the best opportunity that we have to market Dallas. Keep also in mind that a lot of the people that are going through there are going to be connecting passengers in Texas. They'll be going on to smaller cities than that. So people understand what Texas is, but they don't understand what Dallas is. And I can tell you that doesn't matter if you're in New York or if you're in Paris. This is our opportunity to reinforce what it is. The fact that some of these things people aren't going to know on the front end is exactly why we're doing it. That's why we're branding it. That's why we're marketing it, so that we can get people that will come back, appreciate Dallas, maybe move their business here. If nothing else, come and visit here and understand what we've got to offer. If you think about the last couple of years, we've got performing arts centers. We've got Trinity. We've got the new bridge. We've got all sorts of new elements that are coming into this community. This is our chance to have 5 million people that are absolutely captive. To not focus on Dallas and not use this, I think would be absolutely one of the great opportunities lost. This is our chance to really take Dallas and communicate it in ways that we've got no other opportunity to be able to do it. And that's why I think the Distinctively Dallas is so important. My sense is the consensus that we've got is go Distinctively Dallas. We want you to do some more work, please, on kind of the nuances and the coloring and that sort of thing. Maybe incorporate some of the elements of that you heard that were positive. I think clearly incorporate the ideas that you had, and there was a number I thought good ideas here. Keep in mind, though, when you try to do more than one thing, be it kind of do a half Dallas, a half Texas, a half something else, that inherently you're losing the opportunity of reinforcing the single message, of having that message that when somebody goes through, they have that message. That's why when you market, you do, as you well know, at Gensler is a good example of it. You do one message, and you reinforce that message, and you continue to reinforce that. So I think you've got kind of a consensus. Move towards the Dallas side. Incorporate the conversations and the comments in that. Try to pull some of the other colors and thoughts from the other two ideas. But I just think we need to walk through and say this is the best opportunity we've got to tell people what Dallas is, tell people what the new Dallas is, engage them in ways that we've never been able to before, and really have an opportunity from a transportation standpoint of defining Dallas and ensure that people come back time and time again. And as a result of that, we make money off of it. So we don't want to lose sight of that marketing priority, too. With that, AC, why don't I throw it back over to you, and if you would, kind of finish the other pieces of it, then we got any other questions, we'll just close it down for the day.
First of all, thank you very much for that direction. I think we do have a good sense of where we're going to be going with regard to the design theming concepts. The next steps that I wanted to quickly go over is giving you an update of some of the key steps that we're following through on. First, and they're listed there on page 38 as the items that I'll cover. In terms of the outreach process, there's quite a bit that has been done, and what it's all designed to do is the objectives that are listed on the following page, which is just make sure that everybody in the throughout the country really knows about this opportunity for concessions that we're going to be making available. We have begun the process of reaching out to the broadest possible range of certainly focusing first on our local businesses, but then also DBEs as well as national companies. The next page, the planning for that incorporated the thoughts of a number of different groups that are listed there on the top of the page, and we have informational material, some of which is shown here, but others that are being passed out and will still be developed as we move forward. The local outreach includes a number of different outreach meetings. We had the first one of those just last week, in which we had probably about 60 companies represented in that first one, had over 100 participants. Go on to the next page has just one of the pieces of information that's listed there, and on the following page talks about how we've already gone to conferences to get the word out. We've sent out email blasts to something like 25,000 people who received that email information. So there's a lot of people, maybe more than really were on our media targets, but we were leaving no stone unturned in terms of trying to make sure that people knew about the opportunity. There's listing of some of the meetings that we'll be hosting. Again, as I mentioned, we have the first one on the 9th. The outreach also on the following page, we had beyond the email blast, newspaper advertisements in regards to that, and then we'll keep that up as well. The following page has the agenda for what was covered. Since we don't have the RFP developed at this point, needing to get information and direction from the council as we just did, we still wanted to make them aware of what the possibilities are, what are going to be the schedule, what's the schedule, and overall just how we're going to be approaching what they need to be doing to prepare themselves for the opportunity that is coming up very shortly. In terms of the RFP development itself, there's a number of business points that have already been determined by the council's direction on option 4 that still are being processed to put into somewhat legal terms and have that all worked out. Some of those we're going to just brief you on the some particular elements of them, but the RFP is about 70% done, and with this direction, I think we can move quickly to get that completed next month. In terms of package values, that was one of the components that we needed to determine in order to implement the 27% first right of refusal for the incumbent concessionaires. We are going to be using basically a consideration of three different factors in coming up with value.
one could make an argument for each one of those three. We're going to be using the three of them in concert with one another to get a blend, if you will, of all three of those approaches. The first is a very simple, the area, square footage, divided by the overall square footage of what we're dealing with in terms of space. The sales volume value, which is a very top-line approach, would be looking at gross revenues, which happens to be what we would be basing the amount of money that we would be getting in the form of rent, because our rent is based on a percentage of that gross. And then looking at a bottom line approach as to what that value might be based on if you look at not only the gross but netting out operational expenses as well as the amount of the capital investment that they would be making into that particular space. So using those three approaches will come up with a value. On the next page, talks about what our objective there with regards to the packages is going to be, and what it is going to have is as many packages as we possibly can put together. Keeping in mind that we're going to have some of those combined because they're simply just for the nature of the location or the type of concept that's going to be there. There's going to be some that are going to be very low interest or relatively low interest on a particular package that would need to be combined with another one that is going to be very lucrative. And so we will put those together in order to make sure that everyone is an attractive package in which they would we would have people interested in putting a proposal on. The selection criteria, which again was included as part of the option four, has every one of those items there listed in terms of brands. Our ACDBE, which is the Airport Concession Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, well, it's a little bit different. The definition of a DBE is different than an MWBE. The economics, that is how much money they would be putting up in terms of their proposal as it relates to the minimum annual guarantee, the rent that they would be proposing, as well as their capital investment. Those would be the things that would form the major components of an analysis of the economics. Operation and financial capability and experience are all things that we would be looking to that particular proposer, making sure that they are very well qualified and able to perform on what they would be telling us that they can perform on. The retention plan for existing employees would be something that we would evaluate using our HR people, making sure that there is a sensible plan on how those existing employees might be used in whatever future business that would go there. Now, in terms of proposal scoring on the next page, we had, again, we were given the overall criteria. We after consultation and discussion with our partner, Southwest Airlines, consultants and all that have been involved in this overall process, came up with the weighting that is shown there. There, some people might argue that maybe a bit more might be in the economics, but in reality, when we are looking at the economics, we will be having a band that would be established in terms of a minimum and a maximum for what would be the minimum or a minimum annual guarantee in the rent and capital investment. That band will essentially establish just what kind of economics we will have, although there will be the latitude there for still some competition. But we're really wanting to make sure that the brands that are being brought to the table, as well as their capacity to make it happen, are going to be things that we are going to be able to or needing to take a good look at and make sure that we're convinced that they can perform. As a bottom line, they are every one of these packages, in order for them to even be considered, will have to show that they have a participation that meets our or exceeds our goals or has made a good faith effort in order to show why they might not have been able to achieve that. If they don't meet that basic requirement, then they do not move forward. With regards to the DBE evaluation, Airports generally are governed by FAA regulations, and while there is some somewhat specific guidance in this area, what we have found is that in practice there is really a bit more latitude than what some of those regulations might suggest. Taking advantage of that particular latitude, what we are proposing to be moving forward on this is essentially to use the city's program that is currently in place, that is used to evaluate the participation on construction and other contracts that we have in the city today. We have a well-established process in which our purchasing department goes and implements. They have that worked out in terms of their process and what they look for, et cetera. In the case of the airport, the goal for DBE is 23.5%, which is determined going through a formula that is established through the federal regulations. While that just provides us a goal and some guidance, we will be evaluating participation in a competitive environment. In order for participation to count, those individual firms, either as prime, subs, or joint ventures, all have to be certified. It's not going to be something that they just make a claim on. They'll have to go through the process of making sure that they are officially certified. Now, with regards to other related preparations, given the direction that we got this afternoon, we'll be working very closely with the Southwest Airlines design consultants and others to see about following up on making the modifications and the implementing the design theme that we discussed this afternoon. There is quite a bit of work that is going to be involved in making that happen. In the second category, there is the central receiving facility. Because we're going to be having many different companies that would be there working as concessionaires, the state-of-the-art and best practice that is out there for those airports that have chosen to go this route is to create a central receiving facility which would serve as the central inventorying for all the various merchandising and the like that is needed by each one of those various companies. By doing that on a central basis, we're able to much more carefully control access into the airport. This is very much an issue of security as well as efficiency in terms of that overall operation. As we develop the RFP, the concessionaires will understand that this is the way that their inventory will be managed and be charged appropriately, but this is what we're having to get situated and figured out in terms of the location, how it's going to work, and just the design of it, et cetera. Staffing for this effort is something that we are slowly building up to. As we get further into it, we're taking a look at other airports and how they have been administering this, and getting insights from them as to an appropriate staffing level. As we progress and move forward, we will be carefully just looking at that and seeing where we need to add staff to make sure that we're implementing efficiently, but also appropriately. That's the update, and so with that, any questions?
Have anything changed on this from the last time when we finally made up, so nothing has changed?
No, ma'am. All of what I presented this afternoon is along the lines of the option that was presented, and nothing has changed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, we have Mark Andrews, followed by D.M. Randolph. Mr. Andrews present? You're Mr. Andrews?
will you come forward right here to the mic, right here, Mr. Andrews? And I'm going to recite some rules for speaking before you speak. Citizens and other visitors attending the city council meeting shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant-at-arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. Mr. Andrews, you have 3 minutes to speak. You see the numbers up on the wall, 3 minutes to speak, and then you'll see 30 minutes flash, and then you'll see red lights flashing, and the red lights mean stop. Okay, so you have 3 minutes to speak and state your name and your address for the record, okay? And then you can begin talking.
Thank you. My name is Mark Andrews. I reside at 13004 Vita Lane. And I was here about, I think in March, with a proposal for, that would help save lives in Dallas on the street and also generate revenue for the city. And I talked with one of the law enforcement guys the last time I was here. But I also have some, the proposal I have I'd like for the entire council to see it. I'm supposed to like to pass it out of happen for the council.
You can hand it to our security officer. Continue to speak while they, if it's okay, while he's passed it out, you can continue to speak.
Yes, and I don't remember the name of the officer, the law enforcement officer I talked to last time I was here, but if I could speak with him again, if he's present.
We'll be happy to get you an officer to speak with. It may not be the same one, but we'll go ahead and put it together. So thanks, Chief Tatum. Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
B.M. Randolph.
Good morning, everybody. In January, we will enter a new decade. This past decade has wrought many injustices, but God, I'll leave it at that for now. I'm looking forward to many brighter days in the coming decade, making a difference for Jesus Christ, helping people. In case you don't know, Jesus is my everything. An old song comes to mind. Some of the words in the song are, I don't know what Jesus is to you, but I hope he is to you what he is to me. He is all I have to own. He's my chief cornerstone. So I'm going to go tell it on the mountains, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountains that Jesus Christ is born. Merry Christmas, everybody. And that is Christmas with a capital C H R I S T M A S, not X M A S. Jesus is the reason for the season, so why try to cut him out? Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Robert Cesarelia.
and I apologize for the pronunciation of the last name.
Yes, I spoke last week, remember. I have a meeting with Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Van Dorn on Monday, so thanks for that. Why I came today is that I'm still bothered by the suicide of Richard Antoine. I'm taking it personally. And I really want to talk about the bridge and the pavilion. It really bothers me that the pavilion is built with no air conditioning. I don't know where that ever came from. I talk to people on the street and they're flabbergasted the way they sleep there with no air conditioning. People there are acting like sardines, torn people, and they leave like any other day. And so that pavilion is not any better than any shelter. What I don't understand is, why didn't the city, the board, have a state-of-the-art shelter, not like a temporary housing for the homeless? That way they can get their medications monitored by the staff, and they can stay there during the day, even if they, by the caseworkers, if they do their work, they can stay there. What happened to Richard Antoine is, they didn't take his medication, he was homeless. That's what I believe what happened to him when he got strength, when he hanged himself. I'm trying to keep this on the front burner, and I just want to know, whoever voted for the bridge, why did you ever think about the pavilion like that? It's really crazy that the employees have air conditioning and the employee and the homeless don't. It's crazy in August. I don't know what you're all thinking about, especially whoever runs over the bridge. I'd like to know anyone that can stay there for 2 days in the homeless and stay at the pavilion. If you think if you really did a good job and stay there, let us know how you feel when you come back and speak in front of the council how it feels. It's really, really asinine that it was voted on like that. What needs to be done for state-of-the-art temporary housing immediately? Can't wait 6 months down the road to wait for the DHA to get you housing. As I see in the paper, they're having problems with the landlords. And they have to wait 300 people at the bridge to get DHA approval because there are a lot of bids that are wrong. One bid was 5 miles from buses. But I'm just trying to say is that please, it used to be a round table when I spoke 2 years ago. Anyone who would volunteer to do this and come back to the council, I really would appreciate it because you really, really have money coming in, $50 million. I really want to be presented and tell you how that money should be delivered out for the homeless because not taking medication and being homeless is a deadly, deadly disease. And that's what happened to Richard Antoine. So I would appreciate if anyone would say anything about why the bridge was voted on with the pavilion, which is worse than any of the shelters, and if anyone would volunteer to live 2 days at the pavilion and live homelessly and see what it feels like. Thank you very
much.
Trina Trench, follow up. Trish, I'm sorry, Miss Trish. I know better than that. And William Hopkins is our final speaker, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Trina Trish, Dallas, Texas. Thank you very much to the mayor and to the council. I would like to say today I met with Mrs. Patricia Moore at the Dallas Small Business Development Center. She is with International Trade Center to discuss my business. What I had to present to her was my business plan for my business. As you all know, and I sent you all a copy, here's my Texas sales use and tax permit. I give out these free newsletters from my business. Trina Trish, CEO, FedEx does it with Kinko's Printing. Nevertheless, this is a copy of the intellectual property that if you go to the Library of Congress, you will see this intellectual property, African American. I wrote it in 1993. To include in a paper that was published by the St. Charles Herald Guide. It was entitled Black. In 2007, I changed it because they started calling us African American to be politically correct. Nevertheless, these words are called intellectual property, and they are registered with the Library of Congress, and if you check it, you will see Trina Trish is the author. What do I do with that? Well, what I do with that is when I get my other piece registered with the Library of Congress, I sell those rights to anyone for seven figures. What am I saying? I'm saying Jed Clampett, Ellie Mae. I'm not playing. If you would read the words, and of course they're on the back of my newsletter, you will find out that for Black History Month, throughout the nations, whoever I sell this to, an addition with my other intellectual property will not only make a lot of money from that because it will be used a lot, but also I will generate royalties. Nevertheless, I'm going to go to the inside of my newsletter that has a health aspect. Bipolar disorder is an illness that leads to severe mood swings. These moods may happen with no clear relationship to what's actually going on in your life. Scientists don't know what the cause of bipolar disorder. They believe it may be caused by chemical imbalances in the brain. Medicine improves the symptoms, but there is no cure for bipolar disorder. Gidon, which is a medicine that they use for bipolar, may increase the risk of changes to your heart rhythm. Be sure to call your doctor right away if you faint, pass out, feel a change in your heartbeat. What am I saying? I'm saying that poor people, especially the homeless, many at the bridge, have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. They're taking medicine that causes seizures. Many have had seizures. Nobody's looking into this. Why do I not have an apartment? Because I refuse to adhere to a stipulation to take medicine that I don't need. I lost my house, not my mind, and I would thoroughly be crazy to take a medicine that will cause me to die. How about that? I hear, Mayor, that you might be running for the Senate. Maybe next year I might run for mayor. As I told you all before, I've ran for office before. I do marketing through Trina Trish Communications, if you would look and see, and that is an option. God bless you all, and Merry Christmas.
William Hopkins, followed by Leslie Allen Davis.
My name is William Hopkins. I'm gonna be brief. I got brought to the hospital. My father, he's been diagnosed with cancer. I lost my mother. I lost all my aunties, all my uncles. My auntie passed I just went to her funeral this past Friday, Merrill. We're still waiting on you. You had a private meeting with Tyson Gordon and them about to leave. We're waiting on Tom Perkins. He met with Otis Fagan a few weeks ago about to leave. While we were around waiting, I've been steady going to funerals. I went to my auntie funeral last Friday, and I'm headed out to the hospital with my father. I don't know how long he got to live. I don't have no mother. Most of all my friends, Eldra Wheatfall, Mason Hall, his mother and father, Clint L. Fuller, his mother and father. These people I used to go and play and eat at each other's houses, and they all gone. We're on the super fund from the EPA in West Dallas. The super fund is when the ground is so toxic that, you know, the EPA would come in and supposed to clean up and probably move the people and help the people. But by the people being black, they left the people. It was white people, Merrill, left us in the West Dallas project. And some toxic chemicals got on this white man's car from the RSR lead plant. And so he came to the city and the state and the federal government, and they moved all of the white people. They took all of their kids out of the schools because the plant was too close to the schools. But they left the black kids, Tom. The black kids still going to schools in West Dallas right now. They moved the Hispanics to Little Mexico. It was so toxic to their children So they moved the white people and the white children. They moved the Hispanics and their children, because they was killing their children. But somehow they left the blacks. The federal government left the blacks. The federal government went along with slavery. So I could see the federal government leaving the blacks to die. So many people done died, Tom, since you had that private meeting with Tom.
Yeah, either Mr. Lever or Mayor will be fine.
With Tyson Gardner and Lena Hayes and them. So many people done died since you had that private meeting, and you told them not to tell nobody. And they didn't tell nobody, but people still dying. But I'm going to leave you with these minutes I got, because my father's in St. Paul right now, and I got to go. And I'll check you later.
Ms. Valen Davis.
Leslie Allen Davis, 3035 East Ledbetter, apartment 401. But I want to talk about Israel. Right now, Israel had a range fire and was helped by Germany, Canada, and the United States that put it out. And they need help with tree planting and re-establishing that, rebuilding that land up for growth. And another thing, Israel has a group of tens of thousands of migrant farmers coming from Ethiopia. No, from Egypt and Sudan. And it's just a small country. They got camps where they're holding them right now. So I might suggest to the Israeli people to hold them, make a 20-year deal with them. They can stay there while Israel and the United States figure out how they can stop the migration toward Egypt, toward Israel, and stay in their own country. Because Israel has all these people all over the world that need to come home. Okay, building in the East Jerusalem and in East Jerusalem and East Israel and the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. We don't need a Palestinian state in Israel, because Israel is a small country. They keep now talking about the Holocaust didn't exist, and they've got to talk that Israel is not really entitled to that land. But they are entitled to that, because it was handed out by God through Abraham. And what else? Turkey is trying to keep trouble over Israel. Israel is trying to make peace with Turkey. Or Israel has the flotilla that came in and the Israeli soldier was killed when he was aboard the ship. But the Israelis, we need to stop all that. They need to go to a diplomatic town before they bring any kind of food or any kind of aid to the Hamas or the West Bank, because that is their country and they should go by international law. Another thing. We've got a drug war going on right now. And the one drug is drinking. But I've told you time and time again, what causes you to want to drink? It's the stresses of life and not being treated right on your job. And not being treated right by the police department. And the police department, they should reenact whatever the high stuff they had in the 70s and 80s, they should be reenacted like the eight hour psychological exam and heighten the standards for being a policeman, because policemen are the front and the last line of defense in an organized society. And we need the individual people themselves. If you're smart, you need to train somebody, help teach somebody that don't know that's in your class or in your surroundings. You know, not that smart, but still is. If you're smart, you're supposed to try to teach, help others learn, so we can all become wise and smart. And I'm not so quick to say. God bless you. Please pray for me, because I'm going through some things right now. But still is, I would pray much prayer, much power. And I pray the people that have them, that believe in God the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, pray for me. And you hear this say, every time she says, pray for that young man. If you just say it, pray for me in the name of Jesus, because power in prayer.
Thank you. I want to remind everyone that we need to get to our city secretary nominees on the redistricting commission. So if we haven't got those, please get those just as soon as possible. Redistricting commission nominees. It's 341 Word Journey.